Senior Focus. Good afternoon, everyone. It's Anne-Marie Currie here. I'm your presenter for Senior Focus for this edition. Kia ora tato. And I have with me online one of our favourite presenters, Susan St John, who's the Honorary Associate Professor at Auckland University. Welcome, Susan.
Kia ora, Anne-Marie.
Kia ora, Susan. And today we're going to draw on your long years of knowledge and expertise in the field of economics. And in particular, I want to start out by talking about New Zealand Super, because it's definitely the football on the field at the moment in the lead up to the elections, and in a way perhaps more so than it has been in the past. But what's become apparent has been the very skillful way that the current government is engineering thinking about super, as it's not affordable. So we have quite a few key spokespeople around the cabinet table taking that view, and that we need to have KiwiSaver, and we need people investing in KiwiSaver to make sure that they have got options, and then, of course, means testing would come into view down the track. And some people are in their planning believe that that is going to happen, and so they feel they need to take account of that and their planning to be on the safe side. It's a long introduction, but basically there seem to be a couple of short-term fix-it temporary band-aids that people talk about. One is putting the age up, which just postpones the bill for super for a couple of years, and the other one is how it's indexed, whether it moves from wages or inflation as a choice to an actual fixed item of sticking with inflation as the indicator. And long term, it would suggest that that actually would lower it further, as it's already not keeping pace with the kind of environment we're living in. So those two short-term changes are not really going to affect everybody, but they are not good for social cohesion or for the long-term well-being of New Zealand. And I'm sure that you can produce some very strong arguments around that, but I'm really interested in why it's a dumb thing to do means testing, because when you do look across the OECD, I mean, our super is the cheapest to run, and we're currently bringing in $34 billion, the senior population, with its investments, with its paid work and volunteering. So it's we're producing quality, and then what the government spends is just over $23 billion. So there's a sizable investment advantage for the government in this arrangement that we currently run. And it doesn't seem to me that we're going to achieve a lot by bringing means testing in. And if we compare it with Australia and people's experience over there, I think it's very doubtful. But I would like to hear from you how you view it and what your evidence base is.
Yes, well, I've heard a number of incredibly sweeping statements about means testing lately that really disturb me, because it's a short-term thing that government could well do. And if we look at what Ruth Richardson tried to do in 1991, change New Zealand superannuation into a welfare benefit, you can see that that is not completely ruled out for the future. The basis of the argument that New Zealand superannuation is just welfare is out there being made by very well qualified commentators, but they don't have a historical perspective of why we've got New Zealand Super and how we do things differently to people in the rest of the world. There's no country that just leaves people on their own to save for their own retirement and thinks that's adequate. There's a whole raft of ways in which the government can get involved. And New Zealand has chosen a unique combination of a basic pension set at a level that was supposed to be enough for people to survive on, that's now a bit questionable, coupled with unsubsidised private saving. So when we look at the subsidies that go into KiwiSaver and compare them with the subsidies that go into private provision in Australia and other countries, European countries and America, we are quite an outlier. We fully tax the build-up, the accumulation of private saving, and at the end of the day, get a very egalitarian state pension that is unconditional income. It is actually what I would consider to be a world-class arrangement, because the old-fashioned way of tax incentivising private saving, as goes on in Australia and other countries, was very much in favour of those who had long-term careers, very high rates of pay, tended to be male. They were the ones that ended up with very generous pensions, whereas other people who didn't have that opportunity to get these tax subsidies didn't have that extra on retirement. So I do think that it is important to understand that you can't talk about New Zealand Super in isolation. And we have chosen a particular path, combination of private saving and a basic state pension, which has advantages of being more egalitarian, less likely to widen the income and asset distribution, and therefore very good for social cohesion for women, for Pacifica, for Māori, for disabled. It is a great equaliser, and it certainly is worth protecting from those who would change it into a welfare benefit.
Thank you very much, Susan, because that has, in a nutshell, explained so much for us and made us see so clearly just what the writing is on the wall. I hope it's something that people will think very deeply about when they move towards voting time, because people that they've traditionally looked to protect super are not talking about this directly at the moment. But they are very much in league with people who want to turn it into a welfare payment and reduce it. And those same people are talking up the value of the government investment in KiwiSaver.
Absolutely. I think we've got to identify what this unaffordability problem actually is. Certainly it's sitting out there looking like it's a lot of money, but the real problem is not that, because we can afford to do anything that's worthwhile. What is the problem is that currently it looks unfair to the younger generation, that people who are in full-time employment, who have considerable assets, are able to access what is supposed to be a basic income and have it unconditionally. But there is a bit of a clawback through the tax system now, and one thing we could do is improve on that clawback. And we at the Pensions and Intergenerational Equity Hub have modelled how you would do that to claw about $3 billion off the top end of New Zealand Super and use that to fix up all the things that are wrong in the other part of the Social Security budget, such as working for families, investment in the young, those sorts of things.
Yes, we certainly have got some quite deep problems leading to social cohesion issues. And to simply do nothing is not really going to help us long term. So we do need some action. But the question is it informed action, and is it going to be effective, and is it going to actually provide for the bulk of people? Because 51% are receiving only National Super. They don't have anything else, and it doesn't give them a margin to fall back on if they have any major disruptions in their lives. But, I mean, people whose houses, for example, become uninhabitable because of floods and unstable land and so on, they're not getting compensated to the tune of being able to move anywhere and live anywhere else, but they're not allowed to live in the dwelling they own. So there are people in situations that are really in a very anxiety producing setup with very little hope of any improvement.
Yes. And I think that question of having a home on retirement, which has always been the assumption behind our system, that you would come into retirement, you would have a house, and you would be able to then exist on a basic pension with maybe a little bit of extra saving. But the problem now is that so many, as you know, come into retirement and they're renting, or they're reaching the point where they can't afford their rents. We do have a social housing system, but it's extremely inadequate for the problems that are out there. There are nearly 20,000 older people who are in social housing and paying 25% of their total income in rent, which is a really good help. But the government has announced that it's going to put that up to 30% just like that, or not just like that, it would be after the election. So vote for National, and you can expect on the 1st of April, if you're in social housing, that your rent will rise by about $28 a week. And we know these are really struggling older people. And even below that, we've got more older people living on the street than the homeless situation, which is extremely worrying.
It is, and it's echoed by housing providers, community providers up and down New Zealand. They are saying that increasingly older people are amongst, two out of five applicants for every possible housing option. It's just a constant stream of people coming now in this age group. So it's not just a few cases, it's people in the thousands.
And also going to food banks and suffering in other ways from not being able to heat their homes and ending up a lot sicker. So there's some very worrying things that we should be addressing. And one way to address it, as I've suggested, is to share the largesse at the top end of super a bit more with the lower end. And that could mean revising what we do with the accommodation supplement, which is what people get if they're in private rentals, and it's a very low amount. But we know that system is not working well at all, that you have to have only, if you're a single person, $8,100 in the bank. If you've got a dollar over that, then you don't get any accommodation supplement for your private rental. And thinking about how older people need to have a sum of money to last them an uncertain length of life, that is an absurdly low level, which hasn't been changed for something like 30 years. So it is just so completely out of touch. What we need is a white paper or a green paper like what we used to get when there was a major problem that was a long-term problem and it needed a complex solution. And then we need proper public engagement with it. And finally, political consensus, like what we used to have when the Accord operated from 1993, when the political parties decided that they would together look at the future of any retirement income policy change, not as a political issue to fight at the election. Well, we've certainly lost that. So there's a lot of work to do.
Yes, there's a lot of work to do, and part of the football nature of super at the moment is this intergenerational warfare or culture wars that have been started between parties. And I think this is a very unfortunate route that New Zealand is going down, because it's not unifying the country, it's not intelligently looking strategically ahead at what can we do to ensure that we have a fair and equitable society, a safe society, a society where we can all benefit. Because when you don't have good social cohesion, when you don't have people looking out for other people, because the gap between those who have and those who don't is too broad, when you end up with people not having relationships and friendships across that divide, you end up with a much impoverished society. And you, not only do people miss out and become sidelined and second-class citizens, but they don't feel they belong, and they don't feel valued. It's hard to have a long-term, committed, meaningful relationship with the rest of the society. And I think the social evidence of what happens to people, the levels of depression and anxiety that they live under. This has all been documented. It's not something we don't know anything about. It's something that we actually have the tools, we have the statistics, we have the reports. I'm sure if somebody was asked to put a green paper together or a white paper, they could do it. But they're not being asked, because the government is very much influenced in policy by large corporates, by their lobbying parliament and the way they do that. And there's very little scrutiny. The normal procedures whereby people use the Official Information Act to find out when ministers have met with and who they've met with and what they've discussed, this has been bypassed. And we've seen a couple of really big examples recently with the fossil fuel industry putting pressure on the Prime Minister's office. And we've also seen other examples as well. And I won't go into detail here, but those who really care and who really have the evidence and who want to have a real conversation about what is happening are really not at the table and not able to influence what's being discussed at the table. And that is a very sad state for New Zealand democracy.
Yes, and maybe I could just pick you up on what you said about social cohesion, because it's so important. And you also mentioned the incredible contribution that is uncosted, because it's unpaid work, that those who are retired, particularly in the first 10, 15 years of retirement, make to the social fabric, to keeping families together, to enabling parents to do their important productive work, because they've got some assistance and some backup from grandparents, and helping with all the different charities and in the arts sector. All the things that are contributed are unseen and need to be profiled much more. Now, there will be some disputes over the figure that you quoted, but it doesn't mean that there isn't an enormous contribution there. It's just difficult to value it, and it's not part of GDP. No. If it were part of GDP, then as a fraction of GDP, we'd be paying a much lower amount out in superannuation.
And it's what Marilyn Waring drew attention to all those years ago when she crossed the floor to vote against Muldoon. And, I mean, in those days, it was revolutionary to be talking about volunteering as so important that it needed to be part of the equation. Yes. But we haven't really changed. We haven't evolved. And it's unfortunate because in some other societies, the amount of volunteering that's done is a lot less. The government actually funds at the local level a lot of health and community things that we currently do through volunteering.
Yes, and people with a basic income can do all sorts of creative things that they might not have ever dreamed of doing in their working life, and often that can be extremely valuable and contribute to the overall growth of the economy. They can mentor the next generation coming through, for example. And I think we've undervalued it at our peril, and it's a great pity.
Yes, and the invisibility of seniors is one of the issues that creative ageing and the age-friendly cities movement really has worked very hard to try and address, to say, well, it shouldn't be anything for us without us. We should be there, seen, heard, and at the table making those decisions. And while we've been able to make some headway at the council level, in 35 councils up and down the country, they have some kind of seniors representation in terms of an advisory panel or some entity like that. And they do surveys and they do monitor statistically the position of seniors and what is happening to them and where they are and what concentrations and which parts of the city and what additional assistance and modifications does the urban environment require. So there's a lot of thinking going on currently, and there's even an IS 9000 standard now overseas which could come here and could help us ensure that planning of precepts more appropriate for older people. But we're missing the gate. We've missed the ball game. We've got the wrong game on the wrong field when it comes to the national direction of politics and government in New Zealand.
And I think too, one of the policies that free transport for those over 65 is undervalued. I think it's been a considerable contribution to the economy, and particularly in the last 5 years where it's really been very recessionary and nothing's thrived much. If we didn't have older people getting out there, going to the cafes, going to the theatres, spending their money into this economy, imagine how much worse it would all be.
Oh, exactly. And the fact that they have got that free transport does enable them to take grandchildren out on buses and do things. And on the weekends, children are still free on the weekend. So that does allow grandparents to play quite an active role in children's sport and art and craft activities and the likes. It's unfortunate the funding for getting to school on school buses and for concession cards on the public transport for children during the week has been cut severely. And it's unfortunate that it's all these cuts that add up so that families are under so much pressure, particularly those who rent. It's just catastrophic for some, and it's very sad that one in five children are actually grossly affected by poverty levels.
And it's very short-sighted for an ageing population to allow that, because they are the future workforce. If they're skilled and healthy, then that is going to contribute to living standards of everybody. But we're getting so many more admissions for third world diseases, just like back in the 90s.
Yes. We are going backwards.
We're going
backwards. On so many fronts, yes.
Hungry children, 33,000 homeless children, some shocking statistics for a country that prided itself on being a good place to bring up children.
Absolutely shocking. Mm. I can't think of a more appropriate word to use. We're not being alarmist here. It is very sad that so much of the budget went to allow tax relief to corporates that didn't need it, that were taking their profits offshore, not benefiting New Zealand particularly, and to landlords, 25% of whom are not prepared to upgrade their properties to a healthy home standard. And so we've got children living in places with mould and going to hospital on a regular basis because of their ill health. And I think that's an indictment on the terrible state that things are in New Zealand.
Yes.
So it's time for us to wind down and finish. I wish I could give you some good news. And I wish that we could have you on again, because I think there's more need to unpack the whole structure and the strategy around how the government decides things. What basis do they decide things on? And these are the questions we need to keep asking.
Yes, happy to contribute.
Thank you, Susan, for your time. Very much.
Thank you.
Okay, bye. And thanks to our audience who've stuck with us. And we're going to have some very interesting speakers over the next couple of months. Some will be relating to the election issues. Others will be more to do with grassroots things about health, social connectivity and social cohesion. Thanks for listening.
Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus. And do note, Senior Focus is one word.
Let's see.